You're listening to the Silicon Valley Podcast.
On this week's episode of the Silicon Valley Podcast, we start with panel one from Conquering the MMA Game. This event took place a little while ago at the JP Morgan Chase Science Technology Headquarters in Palo Alto. This is one of several panels that we're going to be making into podcasts in the coming weeks. So with that, let's start this week's episode of the Silicon Valley Podcast. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Silicon Valley Podcast with your host, Sean Flynn, who interviews famous entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, and leaders in tech. Learn their secrets and see tomorrow's world today.
All right, while everyone's sitting getting adjusted, how about let's just go down the panel. Dan, would you like to go first? Just give a brief 30-second introduction of yourself, your background, what you're working on, just a little bit of who you are to the audience.
Okay. Jane Buell. I founded a company, an independent RIA, more than 20 years ago. We are fiduciary financial advisors headquartered in Redwood City, and we work largely with executives, professionals, and business owners. So would love to meet you all here.
My name is Tyler Martin. First of all, thanks everyone for being here. We really appreciate it. I am a CFO. I work with small business clients, typically about 1 to 15 million in annual revenue. I've been blessed in my life to exit a couple small businesses. And so I typically help businesses get to that stage of being able to exit, grow, and be highly profitable. That's a little bit about me.
Hi, my name is Sherry Penn. I'm a CEO and founder of Pantheon Wealth Planning. We specialize in financial planning for small business owners, closely held, and some of the retirees. I've been in the industry over 20 years. In addition to the certified financial planning, I also have a master in taxation degree. I help a lot of clients to minimize their taxes and work closely with a CPA. I'm very happy to be here and hope to meet many of you today. Thank you.
And I'm Anna Bruin, Global Relation Services at Anderson. We help our corporate clients as well as individuals in performing evaluation of their business interests, assets, including real estate and intangible assets. Our corporate clients range from a few million to a multi-billion dollar businesses and span across pretty much all the industries. And we also serve the individuals and primarily high net worth individuals. The purposes of valuation is financial planning and reporting, a gift and estate, tax planning and reporting, litigation, and so on. Thank you for being here, and I'm grateful to be here as well.
All right. Now, first question for the panel. Say I wanted to sell my business. How long do I need to prepare? Maybe a weekend, maybe a week? How long is needed? And when would be optimal for them to start talking to you? Jane, do you want to go? Or Tyler?
I'll tell you, as long as you have. And if you're thinking about doing this, a long time ago, somebody said to me, if you're working on a project, there are three things that you can choose. Good, fast, and cheap. You get two, right? So you're always going to give something up. When in this kind of a project, good is what you want. Fast is really flexibility. You've got either a lot of flexibility or not. And cheap is, frankly, probably tax efficiency, right? So if you want something that is really good and really tax efficient, it's gonna take time to do. And the longer you give yourself, the better off you are. And I can say a lot more about that, but I want to let my colleagues say something too.
Yeah, I'd say there's two ways of looking at it. Do it from day one of when you start a business would be ideal. So literally like setting up processes, delegation, all those things that small businesses typically don't do. I'd say that'd be ideal. Having said that, most businesses don't do that. But I'd say 3 years is a good window. It gives you time to have nice financial trending. It gives you time to make a good, consistent story. So 3 years would be ideal. Now, as a practical matter, most businesses, it's usually a year or sometimes even less than that. Unfortunately, maybe even a weekend if there's a health concern. The problem if you do that is you're sacrificing value. You're not able to tell the same story. You probably aren't prepared. You don't have your team, key people like wealth management people, tax people, valuation people, and it's just costing you dollars. So the sooner you can do it, lay that foundation and infrastructure, the better the result you're going to do, the better return you're going to get. And then the most important part is know where you, what life after the sale is going to be like. So that would be my thought.
It has been many years that I have been helping many of my clients going through this transition. I just actually spoke with one of my clients just finishing transition this morning. is a very interesting idea, not only thinking about just like back to what you said. I think even when you start a business, many people don't think about exit strategy. So actually, even when you start a business, it's so exciting. You always have to think about what the exit plan is. So the earlier you start, the better. But also at the same time, give yourself 3 to 5 years to see who you really want to sell, what the outcome you would like to have. And either you just sell and just leave, or you still want to sell and stay. And afterwards, what kind of emotionally, not just financially, there will be different transition stages there will be. So the more information you have, the more professionals you can talk to. You need a really team of professionals to really help you to drive through this, the better prepared you will be after the fact. Because what you think and what in the end, it can be very different if you don't have enough information.
Can I say something else, Sean? One of the things, it's not just, I think, about the sale of the business, but if you're going to use your business to prepare yourself for, to really use your, to use your wealth growth potential, use your business to grow your wealth before you think of selling. One of the things that we find with businesses that we start to work with is that they're throwing off a lot of cash, and the owners in particular, especially if they're very small businesses and very closely held businesses, throwing off a lot of cash. Think about how you can keep some of that and not pay it all to taxes, especially in California. So many of the businesses that we see don't have good pension plans. They think after the fact that maybe they can have a SEP IRA. You can have 401k plans. You can have cash balance plans. You can put away hundreds of thousands of dollars pre-tax for yourself and your key individuals. And I would think, Sean, that somebody buying your business is going to know that's free cash flow after they buy, wouldn't you say?
You're the expert, but yeah.
No, but on the buy side, somebody's going to say, I'm going to buy this operation. The owners are investing $300,000-$500,000 of the cash flow of the business into their pension plan. If they don't have, if you're buying the company, you're not going to buy the pension plan. They're going to give that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's actually a topic I don't think we've ever covered on it.
Yeah.
It's interesting the way you put that, because it shows how much the owners have thought about the business. It just wasn't a day-to-day. It was, okay, we get all these processes. We're really thinking about all the steps in the business, and that would bleed over into so many other areas of the operations. That's really interesting. I guess that leads to my next question then for each one on the panel. How would you, if someone came to you and said, hey, I'm thinking of selling my business in your profession, how would you go about helping them? And this could be that 6 months, 1 year, 3 years in advance.
Yeah. So if it's okay if I start?
Yeah.
So the first thing I'd probably want to do is find out their motivation. So why do you want to sell? What are you looking for in the sale? What are you hoping to get out of it? A lot of times it's very interesting to ask a business owner, what do they think the valuation of their business is? Because sometimes that can be a lot different than reality. And it helps you just understand where they're coming from. Once the emotional side, the sale side of what they're looking to do afterward, you get through all that, then you go to the numbers. And what do your financial statements look like? How embedded are you in the business? Is the whole business relying on you? When's the last time you've taken a vacation and you can just be completely unwinded from the business? All these types of things give you an idea of, okay, are we in a position where this is a saleable business? Or are there some things that we need to do that we might need to fix it and clean it up a little bit so it's more presentable?
When should someone get an evaluation done? And how would that actually be used in preparing a company for later on want to go out there?
First of all, the importance of valuation before the deal speaks for itself. It's an important part of a due diligence process. It involves the comprehensive analysis as we spoke of financial operations of the target company and its potential risks. It's a basis point for the future negotiation between the buyer and the seller. It helps determine the fair market value of the target company, which is important both for the buyer and the seller to make sure that the deal and the price is fair and reasonable. Oftentimes, it's required for the legal and regulatory compliance. In the situations or in the deals where there is a shareholder approval is required, the qualified appraisal is necessary to present to shareholders to ensure that their rights are properly considered. And this is fairness opinions. It's the professional valuation conducted specifically for the purpose to present to the shareholders. And it involves the rigorous analysis of the company and also a comparison of the fair market value of the company to its purchase price. The valuation of books can help with that. And I'm going to pause here because it's going to take forever to talk how big is the valuation and how big of the role of the valuation. However, there's two parts that get into this deal and try to get whatever reasonable for them. However, the basis might be set by us who are a qualified appraiser. So we are determined the fair market value. Here you go. So then you go and negotiate between each other and set the final purchase price.
Sherry, taxes, Tyler, financials.
From Pepstone point of view, I think it's always good to have a different option for explore. Depends on the size of the company. And there may be different options. Also, each personally, when you sell your business, you also have to take a look at what you want to do with your personal financial afterwards. And you get a lump sum money and there's a lot of tax implication to it. And either you can do a certain, we take a look at whether charity will be a good option, or even if you have a small business, 1202, most stock, and you can get exclusive and capital gain, or there will be different that Jim mentioned earlier, certain type of pension plan. Sometimes when you sell to your family members or your son or your kids, or even, and we can use some, what we call modification of a pension plan, may not be everything as a capital gain. So there are so many ways you can do different options. So even certain type of different trusts, the setup, you can minimize taxes. But at the end of the day, we also have to take a look at, if you do a lot of tax mitigation, there's a lot of limitation, also flexibility with your money too. After the fact, if you decide not to work, and you probably need to use your assets to live off on. So those type of things is not just everything about taxes. You also have to look at what your personal finance and what you outcome you want to get, then to decide which strategy to take. Sometimes take multiple strategies to minimize the taxes, give yourself some flexibilities.
Tyler, what about the financials? How long does that take to clean up? And when people say clean up, what does that even mean?
Yeah, in a perfect world, we'd hope there was some trending information with several years of good data. If truly the financials are a mess, then you do, there is cleanup. That's where the word cleanup comes. And what does a mess mean? A mess means a common one is personal business expenses. Our personal expenses are being run through the business. That's one. It's correctable, but it needs to be demonstrated. That's not really where the business is at. If there's more severe ones where you might have like income shifting, which means you're manipulating revenue, or vendors are being paid inconsistently to manipulate revenue, stuff like that, that's a little bit more extreme and might be better off if you're a professional to extract yourself from that one. But generally speaking, just clean up normal. You hope that most businesses are doing the day-to-day things in terms of reconciling accounts and things like that. But if that's not being done, that would be part of the cleanup.
So wait, Tyler, how do you move the numbers around to make the company look better?
So you know how we said Peter, we take that outside of this? I think that might be one of them.
Out there, right? Yeah.
Jane, from a wealth advisor point of view, how long in advance should they talk to you? And what questions do you ask them on that first meeting?
Well, I think we've been talking about some of these things. A lot depends on, and critically, not just what you can do, but what you want. What do you want from this thing? And a lot of that depends on your age and the vision you have for your life. We've seen our very young clients sell their businesses to some of the big tech firms here. They are nowhere near wanting to stop. They want to be serial entrepreneurs. They want to do the next one. That's very different than somebody who is, let's say, in their 50s and has built a business for 20 or 25 years and really is looking to get cash flow. So it's, do you want capital? Do you want cash flow? How do you want to be set up for the rest of your life? How much risk do you want to take for the rest of your life? Those are all very different outcomes. And I've seen clients do a lot of those different things. We've taken a big chunk of a deal, for example, and just created lifetime income, very stable lifetime income for a client more than anything else. Other clients want to walk away with a lot of free cash. And some clients want to just walk away with cash that they can spend. Put it this way. Some clients want to walk away with free cash that they can invest so that they have a lot of flexibility in their lives. That's one thing. One of my clients famously took almost all of his free cash, probably you'll get a sense of this, and did with his lifestyle what he had wanted to do with his lifestyle, and basically bought the big house, gave himself several years of just cash to live because he wanted to travel the world and do this and do that. And he wasn't worrying about more than 5 years out. And I said, do you want to worry about more than 5 years out? And he said, no, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to build another business and sell another business or go get a... And I said, okay, this is what you're doing with the cash. Very different than the client who says, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it again or even want to do it again, even though I'm not, quote unquote, ready to retire. Let's take most of that capital and invest it so that even if I don't want to grow another business, take that risk, I will be okay at a lifestyle that I'm okay with. Maybe it's not my ideal lifestyle, but it's a lifestyle that I'm okay with. So those are all, I think one of the things we're all saying here is that there are a lot of things going on in that set of questions. And the sooner you start having those conversations, the sooner we can suss out all of the different parts of that, because those are all very different solutions.
Speaking of that, having that one client that's looking 5 years in the future and then others that are probably looking more long-term, mm-hmm. maybe even shorter than that, how would you say, again, that valuation, so that range the company's worth, having that tax strategy for that exit, having the financials clean, talking to the wealth advisor of, hey, I need this kind of range for an outcome to live the life I want for this long. How does that prepare the person mentally for that sale? And how important is it mentally? How important is the mental aspect in the transaction? How important is it to prepare in advance that component?
You're asking me?
I'm asking the panel.
It's everything,
yeah,
right?
It's huge. I'll use my own experience. You go through this roller coaster ride and the emotions never stop. Even after the transition, new things pop up that create emotions. And so it's a big deal. So I think setting expectation with the client of what to expect, what maybe give them a kind of worst case, best case in terms of what can happen. I think that's a big part of an advisor's, or at least in my role, that I try to temper it, even out the emotions of it and what to expect. I think it's so huge. I can't understate it. I think that would almost even be the biggest thing. An example for me, we had a $25 million a year business, sold it pretty well. I was a minority owner, but still did pretty well. Originally, I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to retire. I'm right off into the sunset. Literally before the deal closed, I was already bored. Like, think, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And just all these emotions kick in that some you can anticipate, some you can't.
Yeah. But sometimes I think it's how you really will to prepare the client. So I actually go back to Jane's point, as it depends on the client's age too. Like, so one of my client recently, we are still being processed transition. He's a fourth generation business down to his stepson. And now he's very happy. He just stepped back, but he doesn't think he will retire right away. But because he had been so busy for 40 years and he can't just originally he got a really good offer from a big firm, but he actually decided to stay within the family just because that's basically his whole life. And it's not about the money. It's more about who can he really trust and still hold his family business down somewhere. Operate the way the fourth generation has done. So, and that he got half of the price, but still done for it, and he's happy with it. So go back to the emotion. And another doctor, which I just spoke to this morning, they have been doing this for 20 years. They sold to a venture capitalist. And the emotionally, he's, oh, it's not mine anymore. And I'm actually but they're going to stay. They're still a minority owner. And he started getting a paycheck. He never doesn't even understand what paycheck means. It's really funny too, because he never got a paycheck his whole life. And he's like, this is so different. My emotionally, even though he got a huge money lump sum up in front in his bank account, he still said, but monthly, I don't have that much money anymore. So it's like emotionally is how to, every time when they talk to me there, it's like, I feel like being a wealth manager is even more like a therapist. You have to listen to them and how they feel and how to guide them through emotionally, and they will be fine in the future. It's a very interesting process to see different age, different process to guide them through this type of transitions, emotional.
Anna, question for you. Do you ever do an evaluation for someone, hand it to them, and it's not a number that they'd like?
Repeat the question.
Do you ever do a valuation and the number you give the person is not a value that they really like?
That happens on a regular basis. A reasonable range within which you should probably target. So the deviations are possible within the evaluation and performing one, because the owner of the business knows their business much better than me. On the other side, that we have just a few weeks. Always we say, listen, Anderson, we say 3 weeks for performing our analysis after we receive all the information requested. However, how much can we learn and understand about the growth prospects, about the market of that specific industry that we are valuing that company in, the business owner. So, of course, if the business owner is not satisfied, we go back and say, okay, what are the points that you are not basically feel reasonable about? And then we speak. However, the basis are always reasonable. There should be a range within which we should land with both owner and us as an independent appraisals, because our work is going to get then analyzed and scrutinized by auditors, by IRS, and so on and so forth, which basically stops the business owner of doing their job and moving forward once our job is not basically approved.
We have just a little bit more time on this panel. Does anyone, without saying, you know, clients' names or anything like that, does anyone have a story that they could share with the audience of working with someone to prepare them for that acquisition? Tyler, you want to go first?
Yeah, I would say the one that comes to mind is I had someone come to me and they were late in the buying process of a business. But it taught me an early lesson early in my career is they were using their 401k money to actually buy the business. And they hadn't really done a lot of due diligence on the business they were buying. It was a cash-based business and there weren't good financial records. And I got in really at the late point. They had already had an offer and everything. But what I came away from that after the deal closed, 6 months later, this lady, this individual that bought the business went out of business. It went bankrupt and she ended up losing her entire 401k. And had nothing to show for it. What that really taught me when it comes to this whole acquisition world, from both sides of it, it's back to that planning, it's back to managing emotions, it's back to really hiring qualified professionals, even way before you plan on either exiting or buying, because it'll make a world of difference if you do that. I really believe it in my heart.
Yeah, I'd also like to share a cautionary tale about just the emotional side of this, because so many of us just dream of what would I do with so and so many $1 million and what would that be like? And there's actually a whole study of what people do with sudden money. We don't have time to go into it today, but super important to think through that. I had one client who had built a nice small business, probably 8 or 10 people. She sold it to a larger company and she had always really just dreamed of her family members. She was a little bit of a black sheep. Her family members were real estate investors and she was competing with them. And so she got her post-sale chunk of money and she decided that she was going to go and be a real estate investor. And she really didn't know about being a real estate investor. But she was in this competitive mode. Again, it was very much driven by these family issues. Everybody knows about family issues. So long story short, she wasted a lot of the money, made some very ill-advised purchases, bought a big commercial building just before COVID. I could go on. Wasn't pretty. Ended up with much less long-term capital than she or we would have because she hadn't really thought through what makes you happy. What do you want to do with this? There are issues that money can solve and issues that money can't solve. Don't try to solve the ones that money can't solve with money. It isn't a good long-term solution. Just there's the money stuff we can figure out, right? The finances part of this is pretty straightforward if you know what you want. The emotional stuff is really on you guys. Talk to people, really understand what's driving you, really understand what's going to make you happy. Because once you get it, it's a lot of your life, it's a lot of your trouble, and you have tremendous opportunities, that's probably the single biggest risk is that you don't understand what you really want.
The recent case, just as I was mentioned earlier, the two doctors they sold to the venture capitalists. Actually, it's been going on about a year and a half. When they came to me and they tried to say they actually had the three different offers. And when I went through the three offers, and then we actually chose not the highest offer on the table, because if they chose the highest offer, they have the least controls. What I had to walk them through was helping to understand their emotion, what they really want, because they're still fairly young. They're in like late 40s, early 50s. So if they just straight out sell, then they just probably leave the business after 5 years. That may not be what they truly really want. So that's why after the year and a half of coaching, helping them to figure out and what's their afterlife will be, they still then realize they still want to be in their profession. They still would like to be in part of their business they built over 20 years. And that day we chose the second best offer, but still give them part of the daily management control. And eventually they can participate the upside with the venture capitalists. They may be able to help their expansion in their side of business to open other practices as well. And that they didn't take the highest offer. And that was the end of the day. So money is not always, I guess making the most money is not always the top option. Comes to the emotion, deep down what they really want.
All right. We're about out of time. If everyone wants to just go down the panel one more time, if anyone wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way to go about doing that?
I'm around jane@griffinblack.com. I'd be happy to talk to anybody who's interested. Just talk. No pressure.
Sure. Website is thinktyler.com. You can get all my information on there.
Yeah, my company is pantheonwealthplanning.com, but I also have a register on the sherrypenn.com. That would be easier.
And for me, I'm a part of a big company. So if you want to talk to me, I have a business card, LinkedIn. Please feel free.
All right. And with that, let's give a round of applause.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Silicon Valley Podcast. To access our resources, visit us at thesiliconvalleypodcast.com and follow our host on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Sean Flynn SV. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional.